Okay. All right, let's try this one more time. This time it'll work.
Okay.
Okay. All right. My name is Sarah Finney, and I'm here today to interview David Chandler. David,
Yes.
welcome.
Hello.
Why don't we start out with you telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do
Okay.
besides the L curve?
Yeah. Okay, I'm a teacher. I've taught physics and math and astronomy over the years. I've taught mostly high school. I've taught some junior college. And currently I'm teaching at a different kind of situation. It's a homeschool. It's a charter school that works with homeschool families in
Wow.
Visalia called Eleanor Roosevelt Community Learning Center.
Well, that sounds exciting. Okay, great. Now, you have a theory, well, I guess that's probably the wrong term.
Okay.
You have a graph that you have drawn, and the graph shows the income distribution of people in the United States. Is
Right.
that right? And you call it the L curve. Is that
Right.
right? Okay. That's about all I know about it. So, could you tell me a little bit more about the L curve graph?
Okay. Usually if you want to visualize numbers, it's putting it on a graph gives you a way to see the whole pattern in one glance. And I just have a in physics and math and so forth, we do this a lot to try to understand numbers better. People who don't work with numbers all the time may not understand graphs so well, but I was in a class one time. We were talking about the wealth and poverty and so forth, and I just said, "Well, what would an income distribution look like?" And so, if I just drew a line across the board to represent everybody lined up from the poorest person at one end to the richest person at the other, and the best way to show this, if you think of the population of the United States lined up on a football field,
Okay.
with the poorest person at one goal line and the richest person at the other goal line. Of course, the people would be very squashed thin in this process, but anyway, that's just to give you an idea. We call the median income, that's the middle income. That would be the person, or in this case, the family income. It would be the person standing on the 50-yard line.
Okay.
And how much money do they make? Well, when I did this, it was around $39,000 for median family income.
And that was
That
when did
was
you
a few
first?
years ago,
Okay.
around 2000 or so.
Okay.
Actually, I think I was using 1997 data.
Okay.
Finding the data, by the way, is that's another
I
story.
bet
It's
that was a
not,
challenge.
yeah, it's not as easy to find as you might imagine. In any case, at the 50-yard line, we're talking about a stack of $100 bills. If you want to visualize how much money you have as in terms of a pile of $100 bills.
Okay.
And so $40,000 would be a pile of $100 bills about 4 centimeters high. That would be about a little more than an inch and a half high.
Okay.
Okay. At the 95th percentile, which is like the person at the 95-yard line, the income would be about $100,000. And that would be a stack of $100 bills about 4 inches high
Okay, so we've gone from an inch and a half at the
at the middle
50-yard
line,
line to about
about
four
four
inch,
inches at the
95.
95-yard line.
Okay, so the graph is not
It's
very
very, it's
steep
very,
here.
that's right. It's a very slowly increasing ramp that
Okay.
goes across this football field.
Gotcha.
Now, if you go up to the 99-yard line, that would be the 99th percentile. So you're making more money than 99% of the population.
Okay.
At the 99th percentile, this graph would go up to a stack of $100 bills about a foot high. And
Okay. All
that's about $300,000.
right.
Okay. To get up to $1 million, you have to go to the 99 and two-thirds yard line. So on a
Okay.
football field, you're 1 foot from the goal line.
Right.
And at that point, an income of $1 million. Most people don't know how to visualize $1 million, but in $100 bills, it would be a stack of $100 bills 1 meter high,
Okay.
which is about 40 inches high. A meter is just a little bit, a few inches higher than a yard. So you can think yards if you don't understand meters.
Okay.
So roughly a yard high, about a meter high, would be $1 million
Okay.
income.
We're a foot away from the goal line, and our $100 bills are stacked about a meter high. Okay.
Now, one of the things that a lot of people I have found in my teaching experience over the years, at junior colleges even, where you're talking about adults that are, you know, adults are that are interested in astronomy, but just sort of walk in off the street with no particular background on the subject. Uh-huh. And I've given a test question frequently just to try to poll this. Mm-hmm. How many millions in a billion?
Okay.
Because that's critical. If you think big numbers, you know, so many people use the term like jillions or zillions and mm-hmm. things like this just to, as meaningless but huge numbers.
Right.
What they're dealing with is big numbers are just this fog. And the problem with that is millions, billions, trillions, quadrillions, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just all the same to most people.
Right. It's just big numbers.
Big numbers, right. And if you can't keep track which big number you're talking about, it makes it very difficult to visualize or understand the significance of just how big are we dealing with.
Okay.
Well, there's 1,000 millions in a billion. 85% of the adults that I've asked this to over the years, mm-hmm. 85% get it wrong. The most common answers are, how many millions in a billion? Oh, 2, 10,
really?
Or 100. And only about 15% of the adult population that I've polled, now these are people that are interested enough in astronomy that come and take an astronomy class. So
sure.
It's maybe even skewed a little optimistically.
Right.
But a vast majority of the population doesn't know how to come to terms with these numbers.
Right.
So if you realize that there's 1,000 millions in a billion, and if $1 million is being represented as a stack of $100 bills 1 meter high, there's a name for 1,000 meters. That's called a kilometer. Mm-hmm. That's 6/10 of a mile, about a little over half a mile.
Okay.
And we're talking about a stack of $100 bills over a half mile high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 1 billion.
Okay. And where will that be on our football field,
well,
approximately?
It's a very small percentage of the top 1%.
Okay.
But it's a very thin spike of people that are making that much. But we have about 400 billionaires in this country.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little distinction between wealth and income, but it's hard to get the exact numbers the way you need it. But if you just keep in mind that when you talk about people that are making $1 billion, we're talking about a spike that's a kilometer high. So when I say mm-hmm. billion, think a kilometer.
Okay.
When I say million, that's merely a meter.
Gotcha.
Which is, you know, that's a human size pile.
That's something that we can actually visualize.
You're a 6-foot person, a meter is half your height, mm-hmm. a little bit more. Okay. And you go up to a billion, that's a huge pile mm-hmm. of money. Now, if you look at the very wealthiest people, you look at the Walton family, they own Walmart,
mm-hmm.
There the wealth is divvied up among several people, so it doesn't look like it's such a high pile, but it's really it's probably the largest fortune in this country, I believe. Most people think of Bill Gates. Bill Gates in his best year, now this is not like an every year thing,
mm-hmm.
but Bill Gates in his best year doubled his wealth from $50 billion up to $100 billion in 1 year.
So that would be his income then?
Well, the income would be the difference, which would be $50 billion.
Okay.
And I've used that on this graph. So if you think of this graph now as being a little over an inch and a half at the 50-yard line,
okay.
a foot high at the 99-yard line,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking about zipping up from there.
Or a meter high at the 99.
Excuse me. At the 99-yard line, it's about a foot high.
Okay.
That's $300,000. The last foot before the goal
gotcha.
Line is a meter high.
Okay.
And then from there to the 100-yard line, we're talking about going up 50 kilometers. It's about 30
Ooh.
Miles.
Wow.
That's about 7 times as high as Mount Everest.
Okay.
That's up above the stratosphere. That's out into beginning to get out into the vacuum of space at this point.
50 kilometers once we get a touchdown then.
Now, that is the amount of additional wealth Bill Gates brought in 1 year's
mm-hmm.
time. This is an incredible skewed distribution.
Incredible difference between even the median. We're not even
right.
talking about the poorest.
Right. The important thing in terms of this, though, for me, is the significance of this for our society.
And what would the significance be besides that guy has more money than the people on the 50-yard line?
Yeah, it's a lot more than just, you know, hey, that's not fair. He's got more money than me. That's not the issue. There are fairness issues in here. But that's really not the one I'm primarily concerned about. What I'm primarily concerned about is, what does an income distribution like this, what effect does that have on our democracy?
Okay.
Because the problem is, in our democracy, our supposed democracy, is very sensitive to the effect of money. And you're in a situation
but
where...
But wait, how does that happen? Because I thought a democracy meant votes, and that was supposed to be the deciding factor in the democracy, not dollars.
Right. Well, turn on the TV. And as soon as you turn on the TV, you're getting somebody's ideas presented to you. Whose ideas are we talking about here? We're looking at ideas that have been filtered by the likes of Rupert Murdoch, Ted Turner. Very few, the media in this country has been consolidated into very, very few hands.
Okay.
That control the flow of information. And long before you ever cast a vote, you have to have information.
Okay.
Without information, you don't have a democracy. So media is a big part of this picture.
Okay.
You also look at lobbying. You also look at campaign contributions. The entire system is very sensitive to the effect of money.
Money rather than votes.
Okay. Both on terms of corruption of politicians, but even, you know, legal channels. It's legal corruption, really.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, when you cast a vote, you might have an idea of somebody who would make a really good president, but he's not the person that you're going to cast the vote for. You have a person that's been chosen for you by the media and by the political parties as being a viable candidate. And what does it mean to be a viable candidate? Well, primarily it means they have to be able to go out and raise tremendous amounts of money, primarily from these guys on the vertical spike of this graph.
And so they don't care about our votes then, really.
Well, your votes have a part of the picture, but really all the candidates have been very highly filtered by being acceptable to the very wealthy interests in this country before they even get on the ballot.
Once it gets to the time of voting, then they've already reached that level of corruptibility with the money.
That's
interests.
Right.
Interests. Okay.
So by the time, well, not even corruptibility, just who do you get to choose among?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you'd wanted to pick who would be the best candidate, is John Kerry the one that you would have wanted to have up there? And is he chosen because of his, actual qualities that would make him a good president? Or is he chosen by the fact that he's an acceptable candidate to the people who are the movers and shakers? So it's not just Democrats versus Republicans. Both Democrats and Republicans are highly subservient in large part to basically corporate interests in this country.
So we have only a few more minutes left here. What, considering how this small percentage of Americans has such a big impact on our political system, our democracy, our way of life here, what could we do, or what changes could be made so that this would be different, that this graph might be more show an more even distribution?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's never going to be an equal distribution. Just the dynamics of the economy tend to pile up the money in this way. In fact, this is the same kind of a graph you'd find with how extreme it is would vary, but the general pattern is true of all capitalistic economies. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of the way goods and services are traded. Those with tremendous wealth, they invest the wealth and their money makes money.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might have a pension fund, but somebody else that has $1 billion invested, they don't have to spend time to make money. They use their money to make money. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the way it works. There are things that could be done to try to modify this,
mm-hmm.
but that's like having a progressive taxation, for instance, where the people at the top who are benefiting disproportionately from our economy
mm-hmm.
would have a higher, a disproportionately higher burden.
And they're benefiting disproportionately, you're saying, because of their influence on the system then?
Well,
or?
There's a lot of factors there. Like, look at a corporation. Like, look at Microsoft, right? You have thousands of people working, putting in their time, their energy, their labor, their talents,
mm-hmm.
making Microsoft a successful company that it is. And you have a small number of people at the top of the corporation, and then you have the stockholders who are draining off the vast, the lion's share of the benefit of this.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of those people are working for fixed salaries, some of them for even probably minimum wage,
yeah,
and everything in between. And so when you have, even in a corporation, the way the money is generated, it all seems to go into very few pockets. And so you can say, well, Bill Gates deserves that because look what a successful company he has. Well, yeah, he has a major role in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody would question that he probably should have a bigger salary than somebody else.
Right.
But thousands or millions of times bigger than other people?
So, yeah, I think that's maybe the part where it becomes sticky, because how could we decide where that line should be drawn? You're saying that a more progressive, because aren't we supposed to have a progressive tax system right now?
Well, under Eisenhower, the top tax bracket, which is only talking about the money over a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
So once you get the very wealthy people, everything they earn over a certain point, it got taxed 90%. Under Kennedy, it went down to, so the top tax bracket was about 70%. What's happening is all of this excess money at the top got funneled back into society in ways that would benefit the whole society.
Mm-hmm.
Look at our infrastructure of roads and power grid and all these types of things that benefit everybody.
Right.
That benefits businesses as well. You wouldn't have a lot of business if we didn't have a highway system for trucking,
sure,
stuff all over the place. So you basically had the people at the very top paying a much higher percentage on everything they made above a certain point. Well, under Reagan, this got revised to where the top tax bracket was down close to 30%.
Wow.
Now, this is another math question for you. If you change the tax brackets, so instead of going from 90% taxation on the bulk of your money down to 30% taxation on the bulk of your money, how much of a benefit is that to you? Most people say, oh, well, 70%.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. When you had 90% tax bracket, that, and you're the Bill Gates type that's up there in that top bracket, most of his income is being taxed at 90%, and then you change it to 30%. Instead of keeping 10% of that, you're keeping 70% of that.
Okay.
And so that multiplies these guys' income by a factor of 7.
Mm.
When's the last time you had a factor of 7 multiplication of your income?
Boy, I'd like to have that. I don't think it'll be anytime soon.
Right.
Well, I wish we had more time, but that's about all the time we have to talk about this. Could you tell us where we can find more information about the L-curve graph?
Right. I've put this on a website called lcurve.org, lcurve.org.
Okay.
And it gets about 5,000 hits a month over the last few years, and I get lots of email that's basically... It astounds people when they first see it.
Uh-huh.
In order to draw the graph, I have to have a Zoom type of a yeah, illustration there. So go there and see for yourself.
All right. Well, thank you very much, David.
Bye.